The Geekatorium 27-hour podcast challenge on FUBAR Radio.
We're back. It's 2:05 in the morning.
Yay.
You're listening to the Geekatorium 27-hour podcast challenge on FUBAR Radio.
Yay.
I am Richard Sandling.
I'm Eli Silverman.
And I'm Stuart Laws.
Yes, and we need you to donate money to Comic Relief. We need you to give us money. Well, not give us money, but give money to Comic Relief, which you can do by donating. And it's my turn to read out the link.
You read out the extremely long link.
The extremely long link for no reason other than Paul sorted it out. So,
yeah,
what we have is my.rednoseday.com/sponsor/geekatorium27podcast. And if you can't find that, which is too long, just find us through all the websites. Now,
we are going to go to a call.
A call, everybody, a call.
We've got Graham, who's on the line from Egham. Graham.
Hi, guys. Yeah. What's going on?
Well, we're...
Great night, isn't it? Great night for charity.
It's a great night for charity, you're absolutely right. And it's a challenge, but, you know, anything that's worth doing is worth doing in a hard way. Here's our other host, Paul. Paul Gannon's back.
Hello.
Say hello to...
Yeah, Paul Gannon, yeah.
Hello.
Gannon and X.
Who am I talking to?
It's Graham.
Graham from Egham.
Hello, yeah. Graham from Egham. How's life?
Hey, all right. How are you, Paul? What's going on? Have you been in that pleasant theatre?
We have been in and out, but we do keep a respectable distance because next door is really manic.
We're next door, yeah. Graham, too. So you said gammon and eggs. You live in Egg Ham.
That was the double act you used to be in, isn't it? What happened to Harry Eggs?
Harry Eggs?
What happened to you? You don't hear much about him anymore.
I'd never heard of him at all.
You've come a long way since then.
Who is Harry Eggs?
Everyone knows who Harry
Eggs
is, don't
play. He's blacked him out completely.
Yeah, I've either had my mind wiped by some kind of alien, or I don't actually know who Harry Eggs is.
Well, Harry Eggs, says here, has an honesty box. HarryEggs.co.uk. Oh, no, it's Harry's Eggs. I do apologise.
Harry's Eggs.
So what can we do for you, Graham?
Well, I just wanted to see what you're doing, what you've done for charity, apart from this... Have you done anything else? Are you doing anything? Are you going out there to Africa?
Yes. We're sending Eli out to make them feel not so bad about themselves.
I'll be popping over to Africa later on.
Which country? Just let me know.
Senegal.
Really?
Yes.
Whereabouts is that?
Have you done anything to help with the charity, though? I mean, I've had a sack and crack today.
Lovely. Was that sponsored or was that just for fun?
Well, no, I didn't get any. It wasn't that much fun, but I haven't got any money for it, no. But at least it's showing willing. At least it's showing I know what I've done it for.
So it was just the crack in the sack, not the back?
I did it myself. I can't do my back.
How do you do
this? I would have done the whole thing, but just the sack and crack.
It's Red Nose Day, not Red Gooch
Day.
Red Anus Day.
Oh, wow.
You can't put that on your nose, can you, and wear it for fun? Wicked. So,
diseases like that.
Well, we're just powering along as best we can. And we are, what, 8, 4, 5, only 6 hours in.
Only 6 hours
in. It doesn't sound so bad when you put it like that, does it?
So how long you got to do?
Hours, the whole thing.
Yeah, 8, 11,
another
so we've...
12 hours.
Oh, God, thank God you're good at maths.
21 hours.
Oh, balls. Christ
21 almighty. Hours of this. Can you imagine, Graham? Can you imagine?
Graham, do you want to come down to the studio?
And show us your crack?
What are you going to do, though? Are you going to play some tunes? Are you going to...
On your crack?
Yeah, we're thinking we're going to play some fat whack tunes.
At the moment.
We have been playing some tunes, Graham. Sort of every half hour or so, you'd have a bit of music. I'm also going to go
ghost hunting.
Go ghost hunting because this building that we're recording this in and broadcasting live is haunted
by the spectre of broadcast radio.
By dead people who used to get pulled about by horses.
It's called the bus works where we are, and there was lots of bus fatalities in the 19th century here.
We've been reliably informed there's a ghost called George who was dragged to his death, and he's not happy about it, and he has a habit of prodding Justin Lee Collins.
Collins, yeah.
Yeah, or like someone's got a prod him.
Yeah. Yeah, so. But no, you shouldn't mock them, ghosts.
No, well,
What do they do?
They don't like it.
Well, what do they do, Graham?
They get pissed off, don't they?
Yeah, but what does it matter? What does it matter?
Well, it matters because you'll get condiments thrown around your kitchen and it makes a mess.
Well, yeah, that's a bit of an inconvenience, but it's not really life-threatening.
But then you tread on a bit of glass on the floor. That's more than an inconvenience.
That is an incredible
loss. That's only if you're foolish enough.
Well, that's definitely like a flesh wound
we're talking here. Foolish enough to walk around barefoot in your own haunted house. You're bringing it on yourself.
Have you got some ghost wellies? Have you got wellies for when the ghosts come? And you stick them on? You got ghost boots?
He's not going to be a wellie ghost man. He's going to be a boot ghost man.
What about the ectoplasm?
Oh, we've got a lot of that. we're fit to fill with ectoplasmic residue now.
You've got a very dirty laugh, Graham, if you don't mind me saying.
It's not all I've got to do,
Oh! Well, no, actually, from what we heard, you're cracking your balls are all right.
Yeah. They're clean at the moment.
They're smooth as a baby's head. Bottom.
Let's not draw that comparison.
Smoother, yeah. It's unnaturally smooth
down
there.
Let's keep them separate.
As a baby's arm.
Could we eat your dinner off them?
What, for charity?
If need be.
What would you have if my anus was your plate?
Right.
What meal would you like served on it?
California rolls.
To be honest, because...
Oysters.
No. I'm thinking ice cream.
Meatballs.
Well, that'd be dangerous because you might get confused and, like, suck up a nugget.
suck up a nugget.
Well played, Mr. Silverman.
Alphabetti spaghetti.
Suck up a nugget.
I think a tin of ravioli would be... be the perfect compliment to a shaved anus.
The thing is, it's going to be hot, and you don't want to pour red hot ravioli on a person's sphincter.
Well, I'm eating it. Drama salata.
Well, I was
thinking you could use it as a dip, you know, with a pita or carrot sticks.
Yeah. or even celery if you're feeling, you know.
Where'd you stand on hummus?
I'd stand on my head.
Fair enough.
I'd probably a bit of hummus, but maybe a bit of olive oil and a falafel.
So, Graham,
I often feel awful as well when you do that kind of stuff.
Just ask Graham, you haven't been listening to the show so far. Then you just decided to give us a call.
Oh no, I've heard the show. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. You had some good guys on there, didn't you? What's his face on? Donald Hunter.
Of course, we have. We can't get rid of him.
Who's the other guy? There's some good guys, aren't there, next door?
There's loads. We're trying to pilfer as many as we can. We're just taking any and all comers at this point.
Who have you got lined up?
Well,
I heard Gary Glitter's cancelled.
Yeah, but he had to pull out.
Yeah,
you can make your own jokes about
they
that.
Made him.
Yeah, but hopefully, you know, we're going to get the yes. Oh,
yeah.
Someone's. I keep hearing voices. And I forget.
Go and see a psychiatrist.
Oh, dude, I could do with that.
We need a psychiatrist. We need one in here
to evaluate us.
Well,
I'm hearing voices.
I'm hearing lots of voices.
Yeah. Well, a lot of voices.
Oh, you're a poet, Graham. I'm hearing.
Poet.
Yeah.
You
dabble.
Who told you that? I mean.
Well, you know, we've got lots of research gnomes here, and.
Poet.
Yeah. Have you got any prose you want to put down?
A poet. Who told you that then?
Just one of our researchers.
Can you do a poem about Egham?
Egham. Okay. Egham.
Here we go.
On the spot. Egham.
What rhymes with Egham? Just a couple of things.
Egham.
Pegham.
Pegham.
Yeah, you got a Pegham.
Egham and Egham.
Pegham and Egham.
Egham. And
the famous mortuary of Egham, where they peg him.
Was that the poem? I missed it.
It's a wonderful stanza.
All right, cool. So shall we let you go for the time being? And if you want to call us back later, then please do. But we've got a whole roster of people we're trying to fish in, so we've got a few more guests we'd like to give them the time. Is that all right, mate?
No problemo, yeah, yeah.
Thank you very much.
I'll keep listening.
We'll get Donald Hunter. We'll get Donald Hunter to come back.
Yeah, please, we'll make sure.
He's great, that guy.
Yeah, and. All right, cheers, man. Thanks for calling in.
See you, boys.
Take care, man. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Way!
We had a call.
Right. A call. Well, and if that's not enough good news...
Yeah.
We now have in the room... Ash Frith.
The thing is, we need to... You know what? While we're here, let's get Nick in, because he's just been sitting outside and I feel bad for him. So we should get everyone in at this point and have a nice chat.
Let's get everyone in.
There we go. All right, let's cool. I'm going to grab Nick.
Is he there?
Yeah, he should be there. Keep talking.
So what's everyone's favourite season of 24 again?
Oh, no, let's not go. Please, let's not go
back
there.
So here's... Can I say hello to the people?
Hello.
Hey, it's Ash Frith.
How are we doing?
Earphones on?
I love earphones.
I can't hear, but yeah.
Where do you want me then?
This is very exciting.
How's it been going?
It's been going.
I decided I didn't quite know where to sort of pitch my level of sort of excitedness. I didn't know how you were going to be doing, but you all look pretty good.
Well, it's all right. We're largely going insane, but it's fine.
Yeah?
It's fine, yeah.
How many times have you spoken about the same subject?
Well, we've sort of skirted around issues.
never scared to skirt around the hard issues.
I'm prepared to not commit to anything.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So, oh my God, everyone's here. This is brilliant. This is too many people. Finally.
This is like buses.
unreliable.
Well, I've had a tremendous time getting here.
Have you? Where did you come from?
From Bristol. I did a show in Bristol. And what a lovely place London is at 2 o'clock in the morning, it turns out.
On a Friday, yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, there's a shooting down the road.
So,
happy days to us guys.
Hooray! I'm introducing Ash.
Oh, good. Hello, Ash. Nice to join. I haven't introduced
Nick yet, so pause maybe you want
to... Can you do that while I just have emotional breakdown right here? Please, thank you.
Yeah.
Also joining us. is Nick Revel. Hi, Nick.
Yay. Hello. Thank you for joining us. It's great to have so many keen and interested people, and we've also sooner or later going to have a wrestler coming on from TNA Wrestling.
That's
exciting. TNA. What's that?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Not what it used to mean when they made the movie.
No, that's what I was thinking. Is it a specific style?
That's TNA, you know? not TNA.
Right. Okay. Right. Let's see. I was thinking down that.
Yeah. Oh, so good. So where do we start? Let's start with Nick.
At the beginning.
Yeah. Nick, just in case the people who are listening aren't aware of who you are, give us a little bit of a feed on who you are. Give us the lowdown.
Forgotten.
That will do at this point.
I'm a comedian, and I have been for all my working life.
Oh, yeah.
Man and boy.
I remember you.
I have, actually. Yeah, so that's it. I write, I do stand-up.
And you've got a fantastic... it's a podcast as well as a live show, isn't it?
It is. No pressure to be funny. We have a mix of comics and maybe a journalist or a politician or somebody from a... campaigning organisation on, and we talk about the news.
Because that's the thing I wanted to talk to you about while you were here, because people, I wouldn't say complain about the state of stand-up, of satire in the UK, but I just think the tones are different, and I kind of see, like, what we're doing in this country in terms of satire is kind of finger-pointing, knee-jerk, point-and-laugh kind of stuff, whereas if you look at this Last Week Tonight and The Daily Show, they kind of have a more... I won't say educational way of looking at things, but
they go into a little bit more depth.
They do, and I think that's what's lacking. I mean, how do you feel?
I agree with you on that analysis. Yeah. I mean, what we're trying to do in that is use the jokes as a vehicle to talk about stories rather than use the stories as the quickest way to a knee-jerk reaction or a dick joke, you know.
Because I tend to find if you don't learn anything from satire, you're not doing satire, right?
Yeah, exactly. I agree. Yeah. Wow, this is profound. Straight in.
Well,
it's that time of the night. It's the best we can do without whiskey.
They've been talking about 24 for fucking years, believe me.
Yeah, we can get into the Republican. Yeah,
okay, let's stick with this.
Because the reason why is I've kind of got a love-hate thing with satire, and that I love watching it, and I've always hated myself for not being good at it, because in the past I've written for like Dead Ringers and things like that, but that's not the kind of satire show that minds anything other than, oh look, there's Anne Widdecombe, let's point and laugh because she's fat and or ugly, and it's like, well, that's not enough.
Yeah, I know, and you know, if you're working on topical shows and you've got tight turnarounds, then you know you inevitably fall into using certain sort of, you know, formulaic tropes and that. But I think that the thing is, yeah, it's nicer when you can stretch out a bit more. And that's what's pleasing. What's pleasing to me about that show is the fact that we've been going now for about, 5 years? So we've done about 50-odd shows. And we get a decent-sized audience, and the audience always know what to expect. You know, that we get a lot of regulars, but when I do the warm-up, I always explain, look, it's not going to be a laugh a minute. It might be for large patches of it, but if we go off onto something serious, then that's part of it as well. And we never get any sense of, you know, a problem with that, apart from one time when I had to punch out a heckler. But
did you?
Yeah. Well, he attacked me.
Well, then so, that's fair enough. He drew first blood.
Yeah. And then it was quite nice to see the look on his face when I put him on his ass.
When he woke up.
Well, it was almost that. But I was thinking, this is for comedians everywhere.
And all the other comedians were like, I didn't say a thing. It's not to do with me, mate.
But that was the only time. So, yeah, it is nice being able to explore it. Like, you know, we had a guy on from Médecins Sans Frontières. He was just when the Ebola virus was getting very big last autumn. And that was one of the most riveting, I mean, obviously there weren't a lot of laughs in it. Mm. But it was the most riveting interview with him, and you know, and the audience were just completely spellbound by what he was talking about because of the way that he was giving the inside information.
Yeah.
But in a really, you know, charismatic way as well.
Because one of the things that I found interesting recently is that through The Daily Show, Jon Stewart did the film called Rosewater, which was a fantastic, fantastic movie. And
I've not seen it. Miles Japp's in it, isn't he?
I want to say yeah, but I can't remember now. Yeah. But it was one of those films where, like, the film exists because of The Daily Show, because of the guy, the reporter who was out there and claimed
to
be a spy.
Yeah.
But they thought that because he had been on The Daily Show. And so within the film, there's a clip of him on The Daily Show.
Oh, cool.
And they bring it in. And it's funny because The Daily Show, it doesn't happen so much in this country, but The Daily Show, one thing that angers me is that they call it fake news programmes. But I would say that's a completely wrong thing to say about The Daily Show, because I learn stuff when I watch that show.
I mean,
show.
In fairness, it's probably less satirical than Fox News. Or Russia Today.
Yeah. And that always blows my mind. I've probably learnt more from watching Daily Show and Last Week Tonight and all those ones.
They reckon a lot of American, you know, younger generation, college generation kids get most of their news from it. And it's a tremendous responsibility.
And do you think that the culture of UK satire now doesn't allow for that sense of breathing room?
I think it's more to do with the TV culture at the moment. I think it's two things. I think, firstly, TV executives aren't as adventurous as they used to, or imaginative as they, in terms of what the kind of things that they'll countenance commissioning. Anything that falls into some kind of hybrid category that is not readily identifiable as this is comedy, this is current affairs, this is sport or whatever, anything that blurs those boundaries, they don't really know how to handle it. And I think just generally I think there's a real shallowness in that area of the broadcasting executives. I think it's a problem there. I mean, we were talking about possibly, you know, getting it on, trying to get it onto TV, and we were talking to a couple of really good freelance, powerful executives who are freelance now, and they're saying, well, the problem you got is that I like the show, but apart from anything else, it's hybrid, and also they'll want marquee names. You know, and that's the other obsession now. You know, even on radio, can we have a star? And you're thinking, well, it's very, very timid. And I also think that since all the stramash—that's a Scottish word—over the 45, you know, the libel case that the BBC Greg Dyke lost his job and so on, but ever since then they're just terrified of doing something which is going to offend or bring some kind of legal action. And you know, you're always kind of surfing near the line, but at the same time, you know, there's been much more support from it from within the system in earlier eras.
Yeah, because one thing I do know is that we have different. Well, we don't even have parody laws to the same extent America do. So there was a
situation. What laws? Sorry,
parody laws. We don't really have anything like parody laws in this country, as far as I know. And there's also the fact that you can't, in satire shows, broadcast things within the House of Commons.
No, yeah. But it's not, I mean, that doesn't really restrict you that much.
It shouldn't, no. It shouldn't.
What you'll find is, and then on the various topical shows I've worked on, it depends what kind of lawyer you get. in that, you know, because something like working on Drop Dead Donkey, we always had good lawyers who kind of understood where that zone was between technically possibly being actionable, but it was worth the risk, because there is a lot of interpretation in slander and libel,
yeah,
in terms of whether you're part of it is if you are damaging the reputation of a person in the eyes of right-minded people,
right,
which means that, you know, if somebody's got a bit of previous and you throw a bit of mud at them, which might not be technically correct but is sort of not compromising the way that they're perceived, then you might get a chance. Yeah. You probably get a chance of getting away with it. Somebody really litigious with a really good legal team might, you know, technically be able to beat you. But you would have support from the lawyers. And if you got the wrong lawyer, you'd have a real argument over... I mean, I got into an argument with a Channel 4 lawyer once. I described whichever one of the Kim Jong, you know...
Oh, yeah.
I had a joke where I described him as a psychopath. Well, he might sue, and I'm thinking, what, really, will he sue, you know?
Yeah.
And also, do you think we could not probably defend this case? Yeah, but that's the thing, you know, it depends on the lawyer. But I think the and I'm not saying that just because my TV show's not on, but I think that you know, comparing it to the more imaginative shows that you get in the States, I think that's the problem, is that you don't have the same respect and trust of comedy writers, really, generally, I think.
The thing is, I tend to notice
exceptions, but certainly in that field of comedy,
I've always thought that what Britain does best when it comes to satire is fictional satire. Like, obviously, the Donkey's a great example on the hour.
Yeah,
when
that's
we fictionalise things through a prism of a world you recognise, but without having to actually comment on the news. I mean, the Peter Cook sketch, the famous one he did at the Secret Policeman's Ball. What was it called for your consider?
I can't remember now,
but it was the judge
sketch. The player of the pink oboe, wasn't it? The summing up of it.
And that was a great example of when you fictionalise a real event and you can talk about it with much more depth and savagery without having to worry about it, because you've still got that sense of, oh, any resemblance is completely your association.
Yeah.
And I would argue we need more of that now,
because
like The Thick of It, a great example, I think.
Yes.
Despite how much they kick back, you know, we all imagine that the House of Commons is run like that now.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure it's not too dissimilar to what they do. And that's why it travelled quite well over to America with Veep.
With Veep,
And I just wonder if, like, maybe that's what the UK needs. We need that kind of beyond the fringe kind of overall catch.
As I say, I mean, it's symbiotic. You need people in there who are going to actually... So, I mean, this is a slightly different area, but my friend Seamus Cassidy used to be the commissioning editor at Channel 4 for comedy in the sort of era of, Drop a Dead Donkey, Father Ted, Vic and Bob.
The house in the early 90s,
And he's responsible for all of those kind of people. And every commissioning round, they would have a meeting with Michael Grade, who was then head of Channel 4, and all the heads of department were there saying, right, this is what I propose for the new season. And when he got to comedy, apparently, for the first series of Father Ted had gone out, and so Michael Grade... And it hadn't gone that well, actually, in numbers. Michael went, right, Seamus, you're next comedy. I hope we haven't got... let's see what you got. I hope you're not going to do another series of that awful Father Ted or whatever. Or, you know, he's that doubtful. Maybe I'm libelling him there. But, you know, he was expressing doubts about it. And Seamus said, look, you know, I believe in this. I think it's fantastic. And I think you're totally wrong. And I think it's going to be a cult hit terribly. And Michael Grade, and this is the difference, I think, now, is Michael Grade said, okay, well, I pay you to be the expert in your field, I trust your judgment, and gave him the money. Mm-hmm. You know, and the point being that you had somebody who was willing to delegate responsibility to people and trust their passion and their integrity. And I think that possibly that's part of it now. There's a sort of, you know, everybody's worried about being responsible for a failure rather than eager for, which is, that's probably always there, but it just seems very timid.
Prevention's better than cure kind of attitude to making programming.
Yeah.
Because obviously you watch On the Hour and the Day Today and things like that, and there was that hyper news that, you know, think, oh, I can't believe all the graphics and things that they do to prove a point. And then I think it was a few years ago when they were building the new Wembley Stadium, and ITN the 10 o'clock news decided, because the story was that someone had threatened the construction workers of the new Wembley Stadium to say, if you don't give us this money, we've got snipers and we'll shoot your crane operators. So ITM ran the story by having a James Bond sniper thing swing across the screen, aim on someone in one of the cranes, zero in, gunshot, and then the James Bond blood running down. I was thinking, this is the 10 right, o'clock
yeah.
news.
Yeah.
And there is that, it almost is, you can watch something like Brass Eye now and go, yeah, that's not all that unrealistic. I can completely.
And it's also, it's interesting, isn't it, when the object of the satire becomes the actual devices and medium rather than the stories.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about parodying the, you know, the real networks and outlets turn it into entertainment and cheapen it, and then a lot of the best satire that we've had in the last 15, 20 years or whatever is parodying the medium rather than the message, you know. And that's that, and it's, I think that, you know, obviously it's important to do that, but at the same time, you know, I think it's important to find ways of examining the actual content. I mean, what's weird doing it live, doing stand up, is that, you know, it really, really depends. Audiences vary a lot in how receptive they are to topical stuff, you know. And I'm not just, you know, talking about whether if you're doing sort of polemical or sort of quite dry stuff, just generally talking about current issues beyond that kind of, you know, knee-jerk initial gag is sometimes you just feel people, you know, glazing. Oh, I did partly my own fault, but I was doing a Charlie Hebdo monologue, and which has been working really well. And at one point I do a couple of sort of fairly solid lines in it, then I do a bit where I say I'm going to do I think it'd be, as a tribute to Charlie Hebdo, I feel it'd be right to do the rest of this monologue in the style of Charlie Hebdo, right? And I've done it twice and it worked all right, and then I did it, and there were some French people in the front, so I explained to them in French that I was going to do the rest of it in the style of Charlie Hebdo. So they also were nodding in agreement, but then I sort of forgot that probably not the rest of the audience would have sufficient fluency in French to understand what I'd say to the French people. So I did, and it was basically, I started off saying, you know, frankly, the thing that really upset me about this business is that, you know, as an Englishman, this horrendous massacre has forced me, as an Englishman, to have sympathy and sympathy and sorrow for French people. They only killed 17 of them. They should have, you know, we should have killed it. I'd kill them all if I had, well, apart from the winemakers, obviously, and the cheese maker. And it kind of went on like that.
Yeah.
And it was a bit like that scene in the, you know, Producers, where the audience are watching Springtime for Hitler. And I was just watching this audience where, you know, the comics at the back are laughing, obviously, because this audience. And I've been, you know, I was on a nice roll, and then suddenly it just turned to like people were leaving, people wanted to assault. And it's just really strange, you know. And it's partly I just missed out that crucial kind of bit of, I'm doing this like this for a reason moment. But at the same time, you know, you get that to varying degrees. Like a weird, this is weird as well. It's like, because, the point I think about wanting to try and concentrate on analysing the issues and talking about the actual stories rather than just the vehicles and the devices is sometimes you just despair of people's critical faculties being eroded. I've got a line, I talk about, I say Ebola, you know, terrible disease, it's awful, but you know, I'm looking for the silver linings in the clouds of all the topical stories at the moment, and I think with Ebola, you know, we can't be far away from a cure now, you know, now that white people are catching it. And it's clear to me, you know, it's quite clear, isn't it, where what the satirical target is with that joke. But the number of times where you get people, they do two things. There's a sort of, some people laugh, others are going, oh, he said, he sort of implied that something about black people and white people, and then they also look at any black people in the room to see how they're reacting.
Can I laugh at this? Is that all right?
But you have to sort of ease them through it. No, let's just break that down. And, you know,
well, it's the comedy equivalent, isn't it, of when like a plane crashes, but it doesn't report it against unless there's a two British people on that plane who happen to have been involved. It's like, now it's a front page story, and it is just madness. So what we're going to do very quickly is we're going to take a quick break, a quick trailer, quick song, and then we're going to get right back to it. Groovy?
Groovy?
Yeah. Perfect. So thanks, Nick. Stick around and we'll be right back after this.
FUBAR Radio presents the Geekatorium 27-hour podcast challenge, raising money for Comic Relief. Donate now by going to my.rednoseday.com/sponsor/Geekatorium27podcast. FUBAR and Geekatorium, doing something stupid for a very good cause.
It is the Radio FUBAR podcast, my brain's melting, comedy challenge relief. And we have on the line a guest. Hello to you, Mr. Ethan Carter, I believe.
Ethan,
hello. And congratulations on staying awake for so long. I'm very proud of you over here in the United States.
Well, it's still early in our run. We're up. How many hours in? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6.5 hours in, and I'll be honest with you, brain not worky good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I don't go every, 3 hours without a nap, I feel, tired. So, I mean, 6 hours is pretty long, but continued success.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for joining us and supporting us and calling in. Because I know nothing about wrestling, sport, health, and looking after myself, and just general day-to-day hygiene. So if you've got any tips for us to get us through these tough hours, like anything you can suggest, energy drinks, good eating, we'll take any...
Well, I mean, as far as from a health perspective, I don't think staying up 27 hours is
No.
But under the circumstances, I think you have to look outside the realm of health and maybe go to what I like to call the three C's.
Oh.
The three C's being coffee, cigarettes, and more coffee.
Because I'm already on top of the coffee and cigarettes thing.
All right, but I mean, whatever the third C may be, that can help you out.
Well, if anyone's listening can deliver that to us, that doesn't involve me going to King's Cross at this time of night, let's bring it all in.
I like the way we all looked at Eli at that point.
We did. Like,
I've got no numbers, okay?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, just so we can go around the room so you know who you're talking to, I'm Paul Gannon, hello. We have...
Eli Silverman.
We also have...
Ash Frith.
And we also have...
Nick Revel.
And so, yes, we are the British voices currently singing sweet words into your ear.
Well, I'm blessed. I'm blessed to be over here in the middle of the night in the United States, being fortunate enough to talk to you while you go through this ordeal. And, I would be remiss not to inform the people why I'm here, and that's promote TNA on Challenge TV on Sunday nights at 9 o'clock. And then besides that, I'm at your whim. So I mean, what's the funniest thing that's been going on as the voices of comedy over there for the past 6 hours?
Well, I would say the most unusual thing so far was being told off for talking to Gillian Anderson. We had Gillian Anderson of X-Files pop by, because she... I don't know if you're aware of what... Do you know what Comic Relief is?
I understand that's like... kind of the rock star spot of wrestling. He comes in and makes people laugh until
yeah, it could be like that. It's like who was that wrestler? Doink. Was it Doink? You know, there's a wrestler who dressed as a clown and he had a little mini clown as well.
That's terrifying.
Yeah,
Dink,
that's the one. Yeah. If we could have that come in, then that's fine. But no, we had Gillian Anderson come in. We had a nice little chat with her, and then I got a rather stern email saying, talk to Gillian Anderson.
Would you wrestle Gillian Anderson given the opportunity?
I don't think what I'd call is wrestling.
I would definitely wrestle Gillian Anderson. X-Files, I had a little bit of a crush on her, so I mean, that'd be kind of a dream come true.
Oh, you are flesh and blood. I mean, the thing is, formative years for me, Gillian Anderson.
I couldn't look her in the eye if I met her. I'm glad I wasn't here for that.
She was right there.
Right there. Ash. She was talking into that microphone, Ash.
Oh.
No, but she looks amazing, and obviously talent's gone nowhere because of the shows she's in and things. And she always seems game for pop culture stuff. She's like, as I was saying before, she wants to do Ghostbusters, and it's all very exciting.
Well, maybe she would do some wrestling then.
Maybe
she would.
Hey, maybe we can do some kind of
line her up, and then maybe we can get you in. Maybe to be my tag team partner against her, and then I'll let you just.
But we should have a tag team fight here to work out who gets that gig.
Can I just say
that would be worth risking a few wrenched limbs and shattered bones for?
I just don't want to have to pin Eli Silverman anywhere.
Ethan, have you fought in the UK at all? Have you been over here to have a
Yeah, actually, we just came off a very successful tour. We had Glasgow, Manchester, and London, and it was an awesome tour. Our UK fans are fantastic. We love them very much, and they packed up the Wembley Arena, and they watched me beat the living hell out of the guy you probably had already, Rockstar Spud, and, you know, I made his mom cry. And
What was
a bloody broken mess. It was perfect.
What was the winning move in that particular bout?
Just drop him on his stupid little head.
One move catches all, right?
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with that one.
I love that. Your special move is just smash him to bits.
Because from what I understand, getting into wrestling is not too dissimilar to stand-up in that you do a lot of free shows when you're starting out and you kind of get given an identity and given a persona. And then as you get more successful, it builds. Is that how you found it?
It's really interesting that you bring that up, because I feel like stand-up is probably... I mean, I walk around in my underwear in front of thousands of people live and millions of people at home, and like, I think stand-up is the most frightening thing I can think of to do in any sort of entertainment, because you're just living and dying on your own out there under one hot light in some smoky room. But
so
starting in wrestling is a lot like starting in stand-up, just, you know...
So what you're basically saying...
Small time, dumpy venues... Yeah. You know, toilets clogged, promoters stiffing you, you know.
Sounds very familiar. But what I'm getting from this conversation is that you think I'm better than a wrestler, I think.
Braver than a wrestler.
All right. Even though there's an ocean between you, I would say that you think it's more difficult to be a stand-up.
Oh, yeah, that's what he was
saying. There are a few American wrestlers who have actually gone into sort of stand-up in terms of doing stories of their wrestling career, which are, there's loads of humour to be had from them, obviously.
So, an evening with The Rock?
Not The Rock, maybe, there's a few who have come over and done shows.
I think The Rock's above stand-up and wrestling right now. Pretty good.
I'm not sure he's got a sense of humour. Oh, he has got a sense of humour, hasn't he? He did that film, The Tooth Fairy, that was...
you've got a
sense of humour.
Yeah, man, the guy from Doom, I remember him.
Yeah, and there's been a few that have come over and actually done it, and I know Richard Herring had a podcast where he interviewed a couple of them.
That's right, yeah, and Brendan Burns is big time. There's an Australian comic called Brendan Burns. Ethan, and he's big time. He's big time into wrestling. He was doing a show up at the Edinburgh Festival last year with a couple of professional wrestlers from the States. Yeah, I used to go and watch it when I was at university, and I don't know if it's the same now, because I confess I don't follow it in the same way. But we used to go to the live events, and if you shouted for there was very much, you know, there was the bad guys and the good guys, and if you shouted out of, you know, perverseness for the bad guys, you really risked getting pummeled by the rest of the audience. You know, there was no sort of room for... There's very little room for a humorous support of the bad guys. Is that still the same kind of thing? Is it bad guys and good guys now, or is it just, you know, fans of either wrestler in equal measure?
It's definitely, you know, you paint it like that, it's good versus evil. It's an easy story to tell, but then there's always people like, I'm a bad guy. I'm a piece of crap.
Oh, no.
I'm human. Like, I'm filth. I'm awful.
Just for clarification, in the ring, not in real life.
Yeah.
All right, good. Just making sure.
I've got a 7-year-old boy, and we wrestle all the time. And he's going to be much. But he's 7. He's about a foot off being the same height as me. I'm 6'1". I think he's definitely going to be about 3 times the size of me. And have you got any tips for a move to, you know, if I really want to take down a 7-year-old?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably start with a grounding. A good grounding would be a good move. Move on to taking away his tablet so he can stop watching cartoons.
That's very true.
Things of that nature.
He's got a move.
And then, like, he's seven, he still probably has kind of a soft head. So
just press him. Press him in his soft spot. Yeah.
Like an off switch.
He invented a move, because we tend to do it on the bed so that, you know, there's... Well, it hides any damage I might do to him and to the house. Yeah. He has a move where he will pull, like, the bed covers over my head, sit on them. He calls it the breath reducer. I think there's a chance he's trying to kill me.
you know the variation of it? The breath reducer, I guess, where you pull the, you know, the sheets over your opponent's head, but then you fart. I believe it's a Dutch oven.
Yeah. Dutch oven. He would do that. He's an evil little son of a bitch.
Oh, honestly. Good. So he's the kind of child who just stands at the end of your bed at night and stares at you while you sleep.
He will do that. Oh, he will do that. Yeah. Just open your eyes, and his face is just staring into your sleeping soul.
Wow. The magic of childbirth, or certainly having children.
Yeah, it's a petrifying thing to do.
So did you go into it wanting to be the villain in wrestling, or was it a place that you felt comfortable in?
I think that's a good question. I guess having played both roles, but my most success has come being evil and bad and a villain. I think it's a lot more liberating and fun. It's kind of being able, if you're a comedian and you have to adhere to rules and nice language, as opposed to being the guy who can go out there and let it all hang out and just be as raunchy as possible, I guess that'd be a differential in it.
I mean, it's
so
the Hollywood.
More fun, it's way more fun to be bad than good.
Yeah, it's like Hollywood cliche where it's like we all want to play the bad guy. Once we saw Alan Rickman in Die Hard, it was like that's the kind of villain we want to be.
There's a lot more fun to be had in being the bad guy. I kind of feel like there's more of a storyline for every bad guy than there ever is for the good guy, isn't there?
Mm. I mean,
but if you can be John McClane, that's pretty cool too. Cause
yeah,
that
is true.
You actually throw a guy off a building,
but only for the first three films. After that, John McClane just became Wile E. Coyote with a gun. As far as I was concerned. Yeah, because, I mean, obviously, if you've got a fan base that loves you for that character, and then it evolves into, like, the bad guy, do you find that... Do you personally worry about how that affects your fan base, or have they all come over with you to embrace that new version of you?
I think I've developed them with being the bad guy, as opposed to I kind of came in unknown originally. So
yeah.
What they've seen in me is what they've gotten thus far, and it's just been all pure, just nonsensical, diabolical. I'm an entitled nephew of the owner of the company, so I just, you know, I get to be a brat, I get to boss
do whatever you want,
yeah.
You can get away with it.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, nepotism, it's awesome.
And do you think sometime in the future there'll be a narrative where you'll bang your head in the ring and then wake up as an evangelist and you'll be, you know what I mean? I mean, that would be beautiful if you got knocked out and then you woke up and it was like, yeah, everything is good, everything is awesome. Would you go that way?
I think there'll definitely be a narrative where I will be endeared by the people, but you know, that's a long, long way away, hopefully.
I'm just saying, if it happens, I did mention it first, and I would like a little bit of cut of that. I'm just saying.
Just talk to my people.
Well, that is diplomatic.
And your people will say, fuck off. And quite right, too.
Are we allowed to say that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, no.
It is. Rock on. Yeah. It is. This is UK's uncensored comedy radio. I mean, all they basically say is if we slander someone, put the word allegedly on, and if you say fuck, roll with it.
Well, that's the first thing my mother taught me.
Mama used to say, don't swear.
I'm under the impression you Brits really love the F word too, so I'll just let you guys have it.
We love it.
It's all we've got left. Once we had a mighty empire on which the sun never set, but all we have now is a few four-letter words. But we gave them to the world, and the world uses them, but not like us.
No. The one thing that always staggers me is Americans look at our use of the word cunt as like the holy land.
So cunt's allowed now as well.
I'm guessing it is. Right. But no, it's true. It's like you speak to Americans about that word and they're like, yeah, man, you say it like it's like friend or mate or buddy. You know, it's like we use it as a kind of weird term of endearment.
Well, certainly in Scotland, I mean, it really is. That. You know Ray Mayans, the Scottish comic?
Yeah.
And he says, I should explain for any non-Scottish people, if there's any Americans or some English people in the audience, the word cunt in Scotland, it's not really an insult, it's more of a person. Who's that cunt at the bar?
over here, the that word, the C word, is really relegated to like last ditch, final blow.
I think that's good. I think that's how it should be.
You're right.
Is that what you use if dropping someone on their head fails?
And you're staggered backwards. He said the C word.
If I use that, we might be kicked off of our American network.
Yeah. Wow, good point.
And that is the other weird thing as well. If you or I say it, I'm not shocked. But when I hear an American say that word, I actually go, oh, I can't believe he said that.
Well, it's weird, isn't it? Because you kind of know where it's coming from in somebody's cultural, in their cultural background when they say it. It's like you can forgive foreigners when they get something mixed up, you know, or most of the time, you know.
Or every time I take umbrage with them in general.
But if they get there, they think they're using some mild swear word and it's something really...
I think it does lose something in England because we do use it far too often. And it's a great word for impact, but not if you just throw it
around willy-nilly.
Yeah. Don't throw your cunts around willy-nilly, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, fair enough. So,
I actually missed the word you said because I just missed the word you said, and you guys went and talked about it for so long. Now
you're up on it. Yeah, fair enough. It's guilt by association, I think, in that respect.
No, it's perfectly innocent.
Fair enough. So, how long have you been in? I mean, what is the shelf life of a wrestler? Because I kind of see it as if it's like being a model, in that you have your glory years when you peak strength, and then you kind of use that identity to later on in your career use it as a character piece, so you've got a reason to come back. I mean, do you see yourself in this for a while, and if so, would you like your character to change, and do you want a big finale when you decide to bow out? I mean, how do you see what's ahead of you?
Well, I've been doing it for a long time, and I'm just now kind of gaining some notoriety and success in it, so if I'm a model shelf life, I've already been like dragged out in the street and shot because I'm ugly. But in reality, like, the thing about it is you only get better with experience. I've had, you know, a lot of experience leading up to it, and I guess it would be sort of like modeling in the sense that your body is under a time clock, but it's also in a sense like an acting or comedy. You learn a lot being on the road. You learn a lot in every different scenario you're put into.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a mixture of both, and just as long as the body holds up and as long as you stay relevant and stay cool. I mean, the one thing about this industry is a lot of people hold on for a long time, and there's a lot of grandpas out there with busted hips who get out there.
Like The Undertaker. I think he's been doing it.
Nostalgic.
Yeah.
It's part of that... Sorry to interrupt. I was just going to ask, is part of that the sort of people missing the adrenaline rush if they retired, or is it...
Yeah. I could definitely see it as being a sort of an addiction because it is fun. It's not a real job. It is awesome, but at the same time, I mean, when I'm pushing 40, I definitely have an exit strategy, and I want to be my last remaining memory being just carted off by police or thrown out into the streets and never seen again.
In that respect, it's very much like stand-up.
No glory. This is a piece of shit. Get the hell out of here. You're done.
Would you be interested in going into like movies or into acting at all, or afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot easier on the body, and I think that's a thing that would be cool to do. It's just a matter of the opportunities to do them, and the thing about being a wrestler is, like, you can be an extension of your personality, and if we were really good actors, we'd probably be acting because it's a lot less painful.
I don't know. Have you seen Nicolas Cage's films lately?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, maybe...
I don't see why I can't be a new, like, the next Steven Seagal, because, like, he...
That's right, yeah.
I want to watch films like that. They're brilliant, like The Expendables and things like that. Any of those films are just tremendous fun, aren't they? It doesn't matter how... And you've got these guys, like any of you guys who are wrestlers, you are, you know, you're clearly like stuntmen, you're muscular, you're at least rugged, if not good-looking. And so...
I write this Valentine's card for you?
But I think that it does lend itself to it. Naturally, I think, you know, they're all great films. Not all great films, but there's a lot of great films with these guys in, because they are action heroes.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't think I'll be up there accepting an Academy Award for playing Stephen Hawking, but I could definitely,
It's all right.
Barbara Stallone.
Yeah, no, that's exactly... But that's what people want. Like, that is absolutely legitimate film, isn't it? Yeah. It doesn't have to be, like you say, Stephen Hawking films. It can be shooting the shit out of stuff. I want to watch that.
Fair enough. I mean, I can tell you that when you decide to move on from wrestling, give us a shout. We'll get you into the stand-up scene in the UK. Because there's nothing...
I'll be over there in August. I'm going to make sure I get a hold of you guys.
Yeah, definitely. We'll give you a spot.
Where are you going to be in August? All over?
Probably in the London to Birmingham area.
So. Cool.
That'd be great.
Wonderful. We're going to have to sign off now because we're hitting the hour and we need to do a bit of a changeover. So thank you so much, Ethan, for calling in.
Hey, man. I had a blast. And you guys stay awake. And it's about 20 hours from now. If you need to pick me up, just call me back and I will
Perfect. Don't promise what you can't. Because we'll be calling you back every hour. Come on, talk to us. All right. Wonderful. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen.
Cheers.
Ethan, thank you.
Cheers. Bye, mate.
Pleasure, boys.
Bye. Bye.
Oh, that's my first chat with a wrestler.
I love that.
That was great. So let's do a little bit of admin before we go into the hour. Because Sandling, are you going to shoot off?
Or? I will be going in a minute.
Yeah. Not that we're getting rid of you, but you do have kids to entertain.
No, I hate you all.
I take it personally because I turned up and Richard just... Well, he's like, no, I'm gone.
I was going to stay. Vash turned up, so...
Oh, that's nice to know where your allegiance is like with your bloody boyfriend.
Went to school with him. I'm sick of him.
This is all his fault for me. He got me into stand-up. It's his fault entirely.
You bastard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now...
I tried to warn him. It wasn't like I told him it was a good idea. I specifically told him it was a bad idea.
He's the ghost of stand-up future. Yeah. You know, it's like you're going to be visited by three stand-ups.
You think it's going really well because you're young. I mean,
I'm older than you, I think.
Anyway, admin, sorry.
I've lost my little paper with all the admin. Oh, that's right. Good. Here we go.
Oh, is this bit again? Everyone's favourite bit. Paul Gannon reads admin.
And you can eat a dick. So, if you'd like to donate, and if you please can donate, please go to www.my.rednoseday.com/sponsor/Geekatorium27podcast. And yes,
give us your fucking money.
Give us your money.
It just rolls off the tongue, that website you've come up with.
And we've hit the hour.
Radio presents the Geekatorium 27-hour podcast challenge. Raising money for comic relief. Donate now by going to my.rednoseday.com/sponsor/Geekatorium27podcast. FUBAR and Geekatorium, doing something stupid for a very good cause.